The date is May 3rd, 2002, and we're watching Spider-Man. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Harry Osborn to my Peter Parker.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
I figured that was a good relationship to throw in there because at this point, he does not yet know that Peter Parker is his worst enemy. So
indeed.
we're still friends at this point.
Yeah.
So this week
for now
So this week we're looking back at May 2002 when the movies in theaters were Life or Something Like It, Knock Around Guys, Jason X, The Scorpion King, and of course our movie for today, Spider-Man, which earned a staggering $821.7 million on a $139 million budget.
I mean, when you put it into that context, like, what else were people supposed to go watch? I think the only other movie that I might have been interested in watching in theaters around that time was Scorpion King.
Yeah, I think I did see Scorpion King in
theaters. I'm pretty sure I did as well, yeah. But
well, I mean, Jason X, it's the 10th in the series. I mean, that's the one where he was in space. So
I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say whoever selected the premiere date for this movie really lucked out because, I mean, obviously it was bound to do business because it was Spider-Man, and it's, like, the first major motion picture of Spider-Man, but also, like, zero competition, so there you go. But, as always, we will be shooting spoilers like spiderwebs, so if you haven't seen this movie, then please go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
I mean, I'm even looking at the fact that even the Scorpion King, like, The Rock wasn't the fucking Rock back then.
Yeah,
or actually, I should say, I think he was still The Rock at that point.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a licensed print money like he is these days.
No.
No.
and even Knock Around Guys is like basically like one of Vin Diesel's like art house films. It's like because he would have only been a year removed from Fast and the Furious, so even Vin Diesel hadn't really hit his stride yet.
No. I think he was still, at this point, even best known for Pitch Black, which is the character that the Riddick movies are based on. Yeah. Oh, I love that one. We should watch that one at some point.
Yeah, we should watch that one.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, "Oh, I tried and I tried, but I could only find one this week."
And wow.
But quite frankly, one is all you need on this one because it says everything you need to know. In fact, Colin, I'll give you a nice shiny nickel if you can guess what it is. And I feel like I'm about to lose a nickel.
It's Spider-Man.
It's the first Spider-Man.
It's the first. Like, so what I think it is, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be, like, swinging in May 2002 or something.
Oh,
or
no, you're overthinking it, buddy. No, with great power comes great responsibility.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
That is the tagline.
I was going
to
say,
I get to keep my nickel.
There you go. If I had it my way, the tagline would have been, he does whatever a spider can.
Yeah.
That would have been,
oh,
that
absolutely
would have been better.
Yeah. But that may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
This one might actually take 60 seconds. I kind of got on roll here, so.
Okay.
It was also really hard because obviously this is as origin-y of an origin movie you can get, so the plot is pretty bland and basic.
Yeah.
But I think I did good. All right. After being bitten by a genetically engineered super spider while on his class trip, quintessential nerd Peter Parker wakes up the next day with a hot bod 2020 vision and a new set of very special spider-specific skills. When teenage angst and a desire to get laid compel Peter to put his powers to use to win some money in a pro wrestling match, a momentary moral failing causes him to get back at a slimy promoter by allowing a thief to get away. Unfortunately for Peter, said thief, upon his escape, immediately runs into Peter's Uncle Ben and promptly murders him in order to commandeer his vehicle and make his escape. Realizing his blunder, Peter becomes Spider-Man and vows to use his powers for the good of mankind and atone for the actions that caused his dear uncle to perish. Meanwhile, Norman Osborn finds himself on the outs with the United States government after repeatedly failing to deliver on a proposed super serum for America's soldiers. Taking matters into his own hands, Norman conducts the experiment on himself and it promptly turns him batshit crazy. With a green suit and glider, Osborn becomes the Green Goblin and begins taking revenge on all the government officials who were so mean to him. Now hero and villain go head-to-head with aunt, son, and girl next door all caught in the crosshairs. Who will emerge victorious? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. For a second there, I thought with your particular set of skills you were going to slip into like a Taken reference or something. What do you feel like is the most well-known superhero comic book origin story there is?
I mean, I think
like Batman, Superman.
I think it's like almost a three-way tie between Batman, Superman, and Spider-Man, but I think Batman.
Yeah.
Batman's is so integral to his story and in movies anyways is always a huge focal point, whereas in Superman,
yeah.
It appears in like Superman 1 and I guess Man of Steel, but all the other movies, it's not really there. It's already been explained, but like I think every Batman movie shows his parents getting killed almost.
Even a Superman movie shows his parents being killed.
and Spider-Man, I think it's only this one that you. I don't. And Amazing Spider-Man.
No. Amazing Spider-Man, it's Martin Sheen dies.
Oh, right. Martin Sheen is Uncle Ben.
Yeah, and he tries to stop the guy on the sidewalk and gets shot in the gut.
Yeah.
It's not a carjacking in that one.
Yeah, right.
Now, I mean, you say in the beginning that, like, it's an origin story, and it's, like, the most origin of origin stories. I honestly have to disagree a little bit with you. Because as the movie was going into it, once he got bit by the spider, I looked at my clock, and it was 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Like, they breeze right through the initial bits of it, whereas I went and watched the Andrew Garfield one following this. I figure, full disclosure for anyone, this is our New Year's Day movie. However, we're recording this before the possible reappearance of Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in the Spider-Man universe. So right now we're going based on the trailer. That's the only knowledge we have for Spider-Man No Way Home. But I decided I might as well start watching the Spider-Man movie so I have all the context. And with the Andrew Garfield movie, it takes like half an hour for him to get bit by the spider.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so, I mean, I look at this and realize just how much it rushes through the origin story at first. Learning the skills is time-consuming, but...
I mean, I guess you could argue by half, like, in the Andrew Garfield one, it's kind of like, yeah, he probably, like, is officially, like, a competent Spider-Man later in the movie.
Yeah.
This one, I think, just does more to show him, like, developing the costume, learning the skills, and you know, getting the job at the Daily Bugle and how he, like, finagles his way with J. Jonah Jameson and all that and, like,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I could see that. I also think there's the thing about...
It builds the world a bit better rather than just the Spider-Man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, I can't remember where I was going.
Oh, okay. Yeah, for me, I remember when this movie first came out. I remember the hype. I remember the excitement. Oh my God, we're going to see Spider-Man on the fucking screen. How are they going to pull this off? Live action Spider-Man. How are they going to pull this off? And I distinctly remember the trailer. I don't remember what movie it was that I went to see, but the trailer, the teaser trailer that came out about 6 months before this movie dropped. where Spider-Man foiling a bank robbery and the bank robbers, but the bank robbers, like, they rob the bank and they do get away in a helicopter, but Spider-Man foils them by spinning a giant web between the two towers of the World Trade Center. And that was supposed to be a whole scene from the movie, even, but once May 2002 came around, go figure, anything World Trade Center was scrubbed from the movie. But I distinctly remember that first trailer, but you're never going to see it again. It might exist on YouTube, but it's one of these that I don't think there's very many copies of that trailer lying around anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's definitely what I remember about the theater going experience of Spider-Man, or the hype around Spider-Man. But I also remember there was one other thing, was the fact that everyone was like, Tobey Maguire?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Yes.
You know? I mean, at this point, the only thing I knew him from was Pleasantville. And it's just, I remember it was a bizarre thing, but he pulled it off, is what I remember for sure. I have new thoughts on this movie. In 2002, I thought he pulled it off. I have new thoughts on this movie, but we'll get to that. Colin, what is your experience with the web slinger, Spider-Man the movie?
Man, I remember my mom driving me and my friends to Peace River to watch the movie, because that was like the nearest theater. So we went there and we watched this movie, and just being like, so excited to watch this movie, because I don't know if we've documented it on this show, but I am like a lifelong comic book fan. And I mean, Spider-Man and Batman are probably the first two superheroes that I ever became familiar with.
One of the first things Colin and I ever bonded over was in a rehearsal where we both realized we had Superman tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was one of the first things that broke the ice with us. So yeah. Yes, we are both comic fans for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing with that, like, that I always try to think or like tell people is like 2002, like, people, like, take your mind back. This is a time before like MCU and before everybody was like down with Marvel comics and superheroes and all this, when it was still kind of like nerdy, like you were still kind of a nerd loser if you liked comic books and that kind of stuff. And
it's back when it was a Superman and Batman world. And X-Men was the only other thing that had existed up to this point.
And so I remember being like, really, just, it was like, if I were to go back in time now and tell like past Colin like what the world would become when it comes to comic book movies, he would be like, his mind would explode. But it's really funny to look back at this movie and think like, oh yeah, this was the I'd say it's like the first like Marvel superhero blockbuster. Like there was Blade and there was X-Men, but even X-Men, like, if you remember, like, I feel like X-Men still kind of flew a little bit under the radar compared to compared to Spider-Man.
Yeah
I mean, I loved the movie when I saw it for the first time. I was never sold on Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, the fact that it was Spider-Man made it a good movie to me. But if I had, even back then and today, if I have any issue with this movie, it really just comes down to the cast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about going back and telling young Colin what superhero movies will turn into. I mean, just superhero media in general.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can turn on something like Netflix or HBO, or, well, I guess it's Crave in Canada, but, you know, like, if you can watch Doom Patrol or Titans or any of these other shows and just be like, oh my god, this is what you're getting on TV. Don't worry, it's coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we're in a world now where I think that, like, most people know superheroes from TV and movies, not comic books, where back then it was the complete opposite. And back then it was like, now I feel like even I still read a little bit of comics, and nowadays, like, you can clearly see that the comics only served to support the movies.
Yeah.
Where back in the day when Spider-Man came out, it still seemed like they were trying to use the movies to drive people towards the comics.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's like a completely different world.
Yeah.
And it pains me a little bit as somebody who's always been like on that train. It's like, I hold it like in my mind, I feel like I'm a little bit better than anybody who is just about the MCU or just about like these TV universes and that kind of stuff.
Now how attached do you get to the source material when it comes to a comic book movie? You know, like I think of things like, were you pissed off at X-Men because they were all wearing black leather instead of yellow spandex? You know, things like that.
No, I've never been like, I know, so like that's a pain. Well, I mean, there are people who I know are diehard comic fans who get really like, one of my favorite stories ever was watching X-Men: The Last Stand.
Yeah.
And I was in the theater, and this guy literally walked out of the theater because he said, he was just like, that's not how it happened in the comic books. And he walked out because, okay. And I was like, that's a high expectation for a movie for it to be exactly like the comic books. I've never really had that. I've always kind of understood. It's like, you know, the most you can hope for, like similar with like Marvel right now with like Civil War and Winter Soldier and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's close. But it's like there are certain things that read well on in a comic that just don't do well on the big screen. So it's like I always just
don't translate.
Yeah, I just settle for like, yeah, I'm happy with the inspired by type scenario.
Yeah, because like something like the current MCU, I mean, it now looks like they're heading into more of a magical and supernatural quality to it. But before, I mean, everything was like technology based. Whereas this kind of movie, yeah, this one is technology based, sure. But the next one, we start getting into more of the supernatural with Sandman and stuff like that. So, you know, it's.
I mean, the only thing I was kind of, I remember being kind of like unhappy with in Spider-Man was the organic web shooters. Like the fact that his webs just shoot out of his body and not having like the web shooter like he has in the MCU or in the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. Well, or in the comics, frankly. Yeah.
Or in the comics, yeah.
Well, okay, let's jump into Spider-Man, directed by Sam Raimi. I did read, though, that David Fincher was a possibility, and so was Chris Columbus, but Chris Columbus did Harry Potter instead. Yeah.
I mean, you probably couldn't go wrong with either of those, so.
Yeah. It's produced by Ian Bryce and Laura Ziskin, and it's written by David Koepp. I don't know how to pronounce it. K-O-E-P-P. Cope? Koepp? Cope?
I'm gonna say Cope.
Yeah? Okay.
That's gonna be my guess.
Okay. And Stan Lee and Steve Ditko get a, quote, Marvel comic book credit. And we open this movie on those animated web graphics and the voiceover of, who am I? You sure you want to know? And and we're into it here.
When I was watching this movie, the one thing I've kind of realized this with TV too, but like you never get these really long title sequences for movies anymore.
No.
Like,
oh, see,
the title sequence of this movie is probably like a minute, 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
But
no, I think it's even longer than that. Because I remember looking at, when I said that I looked at when he got bit by the spider and it was 10 minutes in, I forgot to add in the fact that 3 of those minutes, or 3.5 of those minutes, are credits.
Yeah.
So he's actually bit 7 minutes into the movie. I mean.
Yeah. There was also, like, as I watched this movie, not that it's not clearly not made by Tim Burton, but I felt like they stole a lot of moves from the original, like, the 1989 Batman movie. There's a lot of, like, similar touches and similar dialogue that end up happening, where I was just like, it seems very similar. And then even Danny Elfman's title score.
Yeah.
It's not far removed from the Batman one.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to the, like, the meat of the Batman theme. Obviously, it doesn't have the iconic, like, beginning piece that Batman has, but yes. Sounded very similar.
Well, I just decided to look up the writers for the Batman movie to see if there's David Cope. But no, he's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Batman's written by Sam Hamm and Warren Scarron. So no. Our buddy Michael over on the Farm to Fable podcast, he has a little segment that he likes to call good writing or bad writing that he brings in every once in a while to that show. This one, I think, kind of falls under bad writing. This movie, it's superhero movies have come a far way since this movie as far as the story and writing goes.
Yeah, it was hard for me to determine a lot of the times whether I was seeing bad writing or bad acting. Like, I didn't know who to cast the blame on. especially when it comes to Harry. And I think that's... I actually think in Harry's case, it's sincerely bad acting, which pains me to say because I love... Like, I love James Franco. And I used to really think I loved him in these movies. But after watching this one, I was like, man, he is god-awful. Like, absolutely terrible.
Well, yeah, and it's Spider-Man 3 where he ends up getting, like, concussed. And he reverts back to, like, this childlike innocence. And it's like, who are you right now? Yeah. Like, it doesn't improve over the movies is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it
but,
doesn't.
But, you know, I wrote down a line. because in the movie, it's the delivery of this line that doesn't make it sound stupid. Well, it still sounds a little stupid, but because of the way that Tobey Maguire takes his pauses, it doesn't sound as stupid. But I want to read this line without taking the dramatic pauses that Tobey Maguire says. And this is when he's in the hospital and he's talking about what Spider-Man has said about MJ. And he's saying this to Mary Jane. The Spider-Man, the great thing about MJ is when you look in her eyes and she's looking back in yours, everything feels not quite normal because you feel stronger and weaker at the same time. You feel excited and at the same time terrified. The truth is you don't know what to feel except you know what kind of man you want to be. It says if you reach the unreachable and you weren't ready for it. Yeah, so that speech, though, does not make much sense to me at all, where it's just like you feel nothing and everything all at once. And
it sounds like a high school love letter.
Yeah, but it's the passion with which Tobey Maguire. I found myself rolling my eyes a lot more watching this movie than I thought I would. And I mean, I know you were fascinated to watch this movie because you were wondering how the effects held up. And the effects, I think, hold up better than the lines and the acting does at times.
Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway, too. Like, I think the effects are still pretty dated. Like, yeah, I've never liked Tobey Maguire. Like, if we could just start, I guess, I hate the casting of this movie. Like, I hate Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, and I almost hate Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane even more.
Okay.
Like, she just does not look like Mary Jane to me. Like, and she doesn't have, like, Mary Jane is supposed to be confident. Mm-hmm. Like, Mary Jane is supposed to be like a bombshell, like just uber confident to play against this guy who's like, you know, this nerdy loser. And I think that they tried to soften her and like give her some, like, maybe, I don't know, they try to make her sympathetic, I guess, by her be in like the abusive home and all.
Okay,
that.
Okay, I was wondering, is the abusive family, is that like a movie invention?
I think so. It's not something I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. And to top it off, I just think they don't really have great chemistry together. I don't feel like they just seem... Everybody in this movie seems awkward except Willem Dafoe. And that's saying something.
Well, okay, on this subject, you want to get into some of the alternate castings that I found?
Sure.
See if any of these were your dream. For Peter Parker in Spider-Man, this is a list here. Leonardo DiCaprio, who is Tobey Maguire's best friend, Freddie Prinze Jr., Scott Speedman, James Franco, Wes Bentley, Josh Hartnett, Topher Grace, Frankie Muniz, Heath Ledger, Chris Klein, Jude Law, and Edward Furlong. Those were all people that were looked at to play Peter Parker.
Yeah, see, I mean, to bring it back around to Spider-Man 3, like, again, horrible casting in Eddie Brock to, like, make Topher Grace Eddie Brock. But, like, I wouldn't have mind seeing Topher Grace as Peter Parker.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have had that bumbling nerd thing down a bit better. I think he would have been a better type of nerd for Peter.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing him. Freddie Prinze Jr., I think, he's almost too attractive.
Yeah.
He would have been at the height of his powers around this time. Frankie Muniz might have been cool. Leonardo DiCaprio, I have a, like, it's just really hard for me to think back in time to what he would have been about back then. But he's one of those actors, I just can't see him in this type of movie.
Well, it kind of started in the 90s when James Cameron was trying to develop a Spider-Man movie, and Leonardo DiCaprio was his top choice. Go figure. But I did also read that Stan Lee himself said that Michael Jackson wanted to play Spider-Man in the 90s.
Oh my gosh.
And for the James Cameron version, Charlie Sheen was heavily campaigning for the role. Out of that first list, there's a few names in there where it's like, okay, I could see that. Even Eddie Furlong, I mean, he would have been hot off of Terminator fame.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Charlie Sheen, Michael Jackson, that's where it starts getting batshit to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so for Mary Jane Watson, Elizabeth Banks, Tara Reid, Kate Hudson, Alicia Witt, I'm not sure who that is, Mina Savari, Eliza Dushku, or Alicia Cuthbert were all possibilities for Mary Jane Watson.
I mean, I would have taken anyone. Eliza Dushku and Alicia Cuthbert, I feel like, would have been far superior.
Yeah, Kate Hudson wouldn't have been too terrible. I don't think I would have liked Mina Savari.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Kate Hudson would have been good.
Yeah. And I mean, if Elizabeth Banks had gotten the part, then who would have played Betty Brant?
Yeah.
That important character.
I was just reading right now that she was told she was too old for the role. Ouch.
Yeah.
That's that would be a lawsuit today. You can't say that.
Yeah. So, and then here for Harry Osborn, I've got Will Forte, Jason Lee, Justin Long, Bill Hader, Patton Oswalt, or Jack Black were all possibilities.
Patton Oswalt or Jack Black? That would have been very interesting. I feel like it does too.
Yeah.
Jason Lee would have been cool. I like that guy.
That could have been fun, yeah. I've got more alternate castings, but, you know, I'll hold off on those until we get to other characters here. But, yeah, the main three, though, that's who they were.
Nice.
So, with the fact that Tobey Maguire was our little hidden Easter egg back when we did The Wizard way back in episode 2, did you see the little blink and you'll miss it cameo in this movie from one of our past movies?
No.
The spider that Peter is trying to take a picture of that jumps from one log to the other, that's an Avondale spider, just like in Arachnophobia.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's not where I thought you were going with that. That whole scene of them at the university in the beginning is one of my favorite things, because I love that teacher. He reminds me of the butler from Mr. Deeds, where he just kind of like appears out of nowhere and is like, hey, quiet.
Yeah.
Let's go. What does he say to Harry at some point? Let's go talk about how we listen.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even look like he's that much older than any of them.
No, I was thinking he actually looks younger. Like, I mean, you know, like Joe Mangliano or Manganiello. Manganiello. I never know how to pronounce it. But, I mean, this is his debut movie. And, like, what a baby he looks like he looks compared to something like where he's come shows up as Slade in the Justice League or something, you know?
Yeah, he's like, come a long way.
Yeah, he grizzled up in a hurry. But yeah, I mean, even though he looks incredibly young in this, he looks older than the teacher.
Yeah.
I was
wondering what, like, around what age range. Like, it seems to me they were casting, you know, 25 and up to play an 18-year-old in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, they were somewhere. Well, Kirsten Dunst was really young.
Was
Kirsten
she?
Dunst was, like, 19 or something like that.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah. Both Franco and Maguire, they were both mid-20s.
Yeah. Huh, I didn't realize she was that young.
Yeah.
I also was noticing on the when they have that scene where the opening scene when Peter's running after the bus and they show everybody all the kids in the bus.
Yeah.
There's that one kid who just takes a massive bite of a donut. I would have wanted to know like what happened when they hit cut, because there is so much jelly that comes out of that donut that I swear he must have been covered. It was disgusting.
You gotta wonder how many takes they had to do and how many shirts he went through. Yeah. Speaking of ages, Uncle Ben says that he's 68, but Cliff Robertson was almost 80 when he filmed this movie.
Wow.
So, and they still aged him up, apparently, with the makeup.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I was talking to my wife today because she was watching it with me, and she saw Aunt May and she was like, oh, who's that? I was like, oh, that's Aunt May. And she was like, oh, is she in the like new one? I was like, no, that character is played by Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
And she was like, what? They're not even close to like the same age. I was like, yeah, they wanted to make Aunt May hotter in the new movies.
Yeah. Well, because Peter's younger. Guess he's not. The actor was younger, but I don't. Yeah, I guess they're still technically the same age.
Yeah, technically
they're still the same age. Yeah, because, Aunt May is ancient in this, and then Sally Field in the next, two movies. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just getting younger and younger. Soon it's like she'll be like a millennial. She'll be sitting there taking selfies and, yeah. A possible alternate casting for Aunt May was Marion Ross, who is the mom from Happy Days.
I don't know. No. I never watched Happy Days.
Oh, you're missing out. The Fonz.
Is that the Fonz?
That's the Fonz, yeah. So when Norman Osborn starts his experiments where he's showing the general around and everything like that, I'm no expert on being a titan of industry, but is the CEO of a company this involved with experiments? Like, do Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, do they put on lab coats and go check on their rockets? Or, do they get their hands as dirty as he does? Like, Bruce Wayne isn't working in the R&D department over at Wayne Industries.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, because I have to think, maybe Elon Musk might have a hand, because he seems like the most mad scientist-y of them all.
He kind of does,
So, maybe he does some stuff. Like, I think if you were a scientist and also owned a company, then maybe on occasion you might provide some input.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, to me, it's like Vince McMahon. Like, Vince McMahon owns WWE, and he is also, heavily involved in, the day-to-day operations. But then you have other companies who are, where it's, the CEO or whatever is just kind of, a figurehead who's really only there for, large-scale decisions.
Yeah.
I was noticing, though, that Norman Osborn, to me, is almost the inverse of Christopher Nolan's Batman, because they almost operate in the exact same way, except the one goes insane. They both just steal. He steals the glider and that suit. Batman steals the tumbler and the spelunking suit.
Yeah.
And then one paints it black, one has the green, and then they both go out and one fights crime, one causes mayhem. Although I was curious, what your thoughts are on who created the goblin helmet, and how has nobody tracked that? Did he kill whoever made that for him?
I don't know. I mean, because I actually had the same question about Peter's costume. Because, we do get the montage where he's drawing all the different costumes, but you never actually see him making the final costume.
Yeah.
At least a movie Kick-Ass, he orders something online, right? Whereas with this one, it's kind of like, okay, he has the shitty costume that you see him making, and then all of a sudden, later on in the montage, you see him in the good costume, but no in between.
Yeah, that's something that I thought the MCU version handled really well. Like, they showed that until he met Tony Stark, he just had this shitty makeshift costume, and then got the sweet one from Tony Stark. So
yeah, I mean, Norman Osborn clearly has a mask guy.
Yeah,
I mean, those are all wooden masks from around the world, but I mean, he obviously has a mask guy. So sucks.
Yeah, maybe it was just one that he pulled. He had got it made a while back as a joke, and he just pulled it out and didn't think anybody would remember.
There you go. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's a billionaire. Who knows? Who knows how those crazy billionaires work?
I was Willem Dafoe's face. The guy just looks like pure evil.
Yeah.
Whenever I see him in a movie, I just assume he's the bad guy. So much so that I remember when I saw him in Aquaman, I watched the whole movie and was just waiting for the point that he was going to turn on Aquaman, and he never does, because he's actually a good guy in that movie, and by the end of it, I was shocked.
Well, and I remember when I heard that Willem Dafoe was cast as Green Goblin, and I'm like, oh my god, that's perfect. He looks like Green Goblin. Right? Paint his face green and give him a few prosthetics, and there you go. You have Green Goblin right there. And then they did the helmet. And it's like, oh, well, I guess that's one way of doing it too. But I don't know. I've seen fan art online where it's him imagined as Green Goblin the way he looks. And it's like, oh my god. He could have pulled it off. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate that the Ultimate Spider-Man comic book hadn't been put out when this movie, before this movie was created, because I think the way that they handled the Green Goblin would have been better for the movies. Because in that one, it's almost like a Hulk-like situation. Like, he injects himself with something, and then he becomes this big, like, freaky goblin mutant-looking thing.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, it's more real-world understandable. Like, they went the other way with making him, you know, have this suit. And then Amazing Spider-Man, just, like, it was absolutely... That was the absolute worst. But still, this one... I mean, I remember liking the goblin costume when I first saw it. And even when I saw the trailer, when it shows up for the trailer for No Way Home, I was like, oh, that's cool. It's nice to see that again. But
yeah,
watching the movie and taking a closer look at it, I'm just like, ugh, it leaves you wanting a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of almost wish that they would have went either with, like you were saying, like had like an actual goblin mask or something like that. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Willem Dafoe, okay, I'm not a big fan of the scene where he's talking to himself in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, like for some reason, that's one that I've always found cheesy, like even back when I first saw this movie. But, I mean, at least it shows you kind of the range and what Willem Dafoe can do, especially with his face.
Yeah.
And now, when he is the goblin, you take away all this opportunity to see him talking. Like that scene where he has Spider-Man tied up on the roof, where he's abducted him from the Bugle building. And, like, you know, walks over and he's leaning against the thing and slaps Spider-Man on the back of the head.
Yeah.
I would love to see his face for that scene because
there's
obviously some great acting going on there. And the mouth doesn't even move, you know?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It's like you can tell in his eyes, like, it's almost like he's just trying to be as wide-eyed as possible to, like, have the craziest eyes as possible to get something through. But then the mask is just stone, and it definitely, you lose a lot there.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about, like, the newer Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland, is the fact that the suit, the eyes move. And that's what these first Spider-Man movies are missing, is they've just got these stale, expressionless eyes. And that's the great thing about the cartoon, that's the great thing about the comics, is that his eyes do show emotion. And in, in something like this, you've already got no emotion from Spider-Man, and you've also got a suit that shows no emotion. Ba-dum-bum. Oh, come on, Tobey Maguire. Oh, dunking on Tobey Maguire. But still, you know, and then you cover up, you know, this fantastic acclaimed actor that you have in the movie.
Yeah.
For Norman Osborn, though. Here's some alternate castings. I told you I had more. Billy Crudup, John Travolta, Robert De Niro, Nicolas Cage, John Malkovich, Bill Paxton, Mel Gibson, or Brad Dourif were all possibilities.
Hmm.
I remember once reading that if there had been an Amazing Spider-Man 3, they were looking at John Malkovich to play the Vulture. I kind of like that. But
yeah.
I don't know if I like him as Green Goblin. But the Nicolas Cage one is definitely fascinating.
Nicolas Cage I'm into.
Yeah.
Hey, Peter. I'm gonna get you.
Oh, man. Have you seen the ad for the movie Pig?
No.
Oh, it's a new Nicolas Cage movie. It's on Amazon. It's someone takes his pig.
Is that the one where he, like, doesn't talk? Or is that a different one? Someone was telling me about... I think we were talking about it when we were talking about Bruce Willis. And how Bruce Willis has kind of entered into Nicolas Cage territory, but one of his new movies where it's like, I think he says like five lines or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. There were more than five lines in the trailer. He's got a pig. Okay. He's got a truffle finding pig, and he sells truffles to the big restaurants. But he lives in a cabin in the woods, and someone takes his pig. That's the storyline.
So it's like, is it just John Wick?
John Wick with pig? I don't know. I don't know. It looks really serious. I don't know. My girlfriend says that she watched it after we found the trailer. And
interesting.
She says, you'd have to be really stoned to watch this movie and really enjoy it. So that was about...
What did you think, like, let's talk about Harry Osborn.
Okay.
I mean, the whole MJ, like that thing, the MJ-Harry-Peter love triangle is a thing that happens.
Uh-huh. In this, it's very forced, though.
It's so forced. Like, that should have been, like, a second movie thing. You know what? Like,
yeah.
Or just, like, build. Like, I didn't like that all of a sudden they're just, you just find out that they're dating when Peter sees her at the diner.
Yeah.
I think they should have done more to make Harry seem like an actual good guy, where he, like, wanted to help Peter, not just clearly just take MJ for himself.
Yeah, all because he happened to be looking when she broke up with Flash.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what a scumbag move. I mean, you say that Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire have no chemistry. I think she has even less with James Franco.
Yeah, which, I mean, how's that possible?
Yeah.
The guy's a dreamboat.
That's what I've heard. Although, he's not canceled at all
for
sexual misconduct or anything. Yeah.
As far as I've heard, he's still on the ropes. He's hanging in there.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of like all the like romantic plot points in this movie. Like I would say to a point, even Peter and Mary Jane's romance seems forced. I liked the kind of slow burn that they've had in the new one, and even in. I'm trying to remember. In Amazing Spider-Man, it's not Mary Jane, it's Gwen Stacy,
Gwen
right?
Stacy, yeah. And they're really awkward together, but, like, their chemistry is great.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's because those two were actually dating at the time.
Yeah.
But, like, it's, yeah, their chemistry is much better. They're more playful.
Yeah. Is there a time jump? No. Like, is there a time jump between graduation and moving to the city?
Maybe a couple months.
Or is it maybe a couple months? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's much more than that.
That might have been something they could have used to make it a little bit better, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed like they were trying to... And maybe they thought, like, they didn't know if they were going to... If it was going to do well, and they didn't know if they were going to make another one. But it seemed like they were trying to cram so much into this movie with, like to set up Harry, to set up their romance with Mary Jane and all that, that it didn't allow, like, other parts of the movie to breathe. Like, you could have done a little bit more with the J. Jonah Jameson stuff. You could have had even Norman's stuff a little bit more drawn out and explained.
Yeah. But one thing I did find is the places where the movie did breathe, though, dragged so much.
Yeah.
Because they gave the movie places to breathe in weird places, like the funeral.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we get it. He's going to be sad. And, like, I mean... Okay, this is our opportunity to have some great acting or something. But on the other hand, get on with the story. You know, that's one of those places where I don't think we needed to see him sitting on his bed crying and all that sort of thing. From the point that Uncle Ben dies, or, sorry, I guess, to the point that the guy gets thrown out the window.
Yeah.
To the point that we kind of get back into Spider-Man's, it's like a 10-minute drag in this movie that all of a sudden, this is what we could speed along. And, yeah, they could have given it to other plot points that could have, like you said, make the love story more enjoyable or, you know, things like that. I don't know. The kiss in the rain, though, it is still, I mean, that is still one of those moments, though, it's that...
Your MTV Movies Choice Award kiss of the year?
That's exactly what that is. Yeah, that's one where Kirsten Dunst, you know, think what you want about her being MJ, but she is hot in that shot. And, I mean, it's a sexy moment, but, yeah, I mean, other than that, they've got, like, no chemistry at all, you know.
Yeah. I think it's just something that I've always been bothered about by this movie is that Tobey Maguire just never manages to capture the essence of what makes Spider-Man great.
Yeah.
Like, he never manages to capture that playful spirit, that, like, wisecracking, like, Ryan, I don't know how else to describe it, but, like, Ryan Reynolds-ish nature.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Andrew Garfield gets it.
I know, like, and that's what I've always said. Like, Andrew Garfield, to me, I actually like Andrew Garfield the best. He's my favorite Peter Parker.
It's like, too I bad even the movies aren't.
Yeah, it's one of the rare instances where I wish they would have just tried to go back right away and do almost the exact same thing, like have Green Goblin be in the first movie, have Doc Ock be in the second, have Venom in the third. Like, I felt like that is a great setup to go. Mm-hmm. The Tobey Maguire, they ham-fisted too many people in the third one, which made it shitty, and then also just doubled down on their piss-poor casting choices. But, you know, in Amazing Spider-Man, Dane DeHaan is an amazing Harry Osborn. you know, they didn't have to make him the Green Goblin, and they could have done that also better. But still, I still think that Andrew Garfield is, he's just the best Peter Parker. He has the soul. He has the funny. He has just the charm for, I guess, that Tobey Maguire is just, he's just so flat. He's so flat on everything. Even when he's trying to be like urgent or panicking or like, it's just, everything just reads flat.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Well, I actually have something written down that might help kind of highlight, sum up Tobey Maguire's character choice in this movie. And I mean, it could be the writing as well, but
yeah.
But there's that scene where they're in the backyard and it's the whole, oh, you heard that? Oh, well, I was just taking the garbage out, but they start talking and it's the whole, no, what are you doing after high school? Oh, you're going to light up Broadway and everything like that. But the most awkward couplet of dialogue is when she says, you know, you're taller than you look.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that down, too.
I hunch. Don't.
Oh, my gosh. Such trash.
And then it's such a cheesy moment, and then it's, like, it's interrupted by, like, Flash being, like, as stereotypical machismo high school as you can be. You know, oh, hey, don't scratch the leather. Oh, yeah. You know, look at my brand new car. But yeah, I mean, that right there, though, does get Tobey Maguire, or does get Peter Parker, looking at ads for cars. Oh, and I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner! Now, always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week, Spider-Man is brought to you by Rolls-Royce, Toyota, Cadillac, Ford, and, of course, Sam Raimi's Oldsmobile Delta 88 car, which is in every one of his movies, or nearly every one of his movies. Plus, like, when he's flipping through the magazine, there's things like Porsche and Volkswagen. I didn't write them down because, like, they were ads in the magazine, but they didn't seem like official ads, just name drops, so I didn't include them. But Nike and Stuart Weitzman shoes, Palm Pilot, Baskin-Robbins, Chock Full of Nuts coffee, Carlsberg and Budweiser beer, Maker's Mark and Suntory whiskey, Singular Cellular, Prudential Financial, Columbia University, Better Homes Magazine, WNYZ 98.8 FM, Tri-State Armored Services, Marriott and Empire Grand Hotels, The Lion King on Broadway, The Moondance Diner, which is actually a real place, Perk Plus Shampoo, Luxrite Hair Nets, LG, TDK, and Samsung Electronics, Cup Noodles, Dr. Pepper, Lay's and Ruffles Potato Chips, Rice Krispies, Snyder's and Rolled Gold Pretzels, Lifesavers, Corn Nuts, Ding Dong, Snickers, Tropicana Orange Juice, and Rolaids. Plus, a shout-out to the fictional Quest Aerospace, Daily Bugle, and Oscorp. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Nice. Speaking of Andrew Garfield, I just watched last night Tick, Tick, Boom on Netflix.
Oh, is that the Jonathan Larson story?
Yeah, and haven't watched it, I'll give it a plug. It's very, very good. The music is awesome. You should go watch it. But as a weird Spider-Man connection, he is actually working in the Moondance Diner.
Oh, wow. So interesting.
There you go.
Well, here's another weird Spider-Man connection for you. Macho Man Randy Savage in his early years. Bonesaw's ready. In his early years, he wrestled as the Spider.
Oh yeah. Nice. Another connection is that Joe Manganiello has campaigned very, very hard, and I think he might be playing him in the Hulk Hogan biopic, but he is for a very long time wanted to play Macho Man Randy Savage in a movie. And nice. He does a pretty spot-on impression. Not that it's that hard to do, but still.
Yeah. Snap into a Slim Jim!
Snap into a Slim Jim!
Oh, Bonesaw. He's so great. Like, I mean, you know, there's your scene that's just like all these tiny cameos where you've got Bruce Campbell and you've got Macho Man Randy Savage, but you also have Octavia Spencer? What?
And I'm pretty sure all those girls are like Nitro girls from old school WCW.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
I have a massive bone to pick with that cage match though. I like when Peter later goes to the promoter justifies not paying him the $3,000 by saying the ad said for 3 minutes you pinned him in two. But I just want to point out that no pin takes place. There is a three count, but there's no pin. That's unheard of in professional wrestling.
Yeah. I don't understand that, you know, he signs up and, you know, Octavia Spencer's all, you know, get out of here. There's no flyweight division. No, sign me up. Right?
Yeah.
And like, so they don't even want to put him in this fight. Yeah. And then they drop the fucking cage on him.
Well, I mean, they signed a liability waiver, so what do they care?
I suppose that's true. Yeah. The human spider.
I also love when they lock the cage in place. They have those, they're like clearly these old, like 1910s prop steel locks that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
Oh, yeah. 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 Like Houdini,
yeah.
Houdini was escaping from those. Yeah.
These magician's locks.
Yeah, and of course we get a great line like, nice outfit. Did your husband make it for you?
Yeah.
Get down here! Snap into the Slim Jim!
That doesn't hold up. That doesn't hold up very well.
No, not really. No. I will say that, I mean, when the guy robs the wrestling guy, when you know, when the guy gets robbed, and Peter doesn't stop him, and he has, like, the mic-dropping line of, I missed the part where that was my problem.
Yeah.
It's like, I think Peter did the right thing. I'm sorry, like...
Yeah, I think...
That guy was a dick!
It's one of those things where, like, hindsight is 20/20. If his uncle doesn't get murdered, it's like, whatever, you know? But because his uncle got murdered, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a life lesson.
And we get to see just how much Tobey Maguire is the king of the ugly cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
When his uncle dies. Oh, man. Apparently there was friction on set between him and James Franco because James Franco made some crack about his frog-like appearance.
Oh, really?
And I watch him cry and I'm like, well, I see it. I mean, that's still mean, James Franco, but...
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
No. I mean, come on, James Franco, like... Later on, when he sees his dead father, he's like, what have you done? What have you done?
Yeah, there is that.
You're the only family I have now, Peter. or his, like, classic, I want to buy you something. It'll make you feel better.
Yes, yes, that's the one right there. What do you mean amazing? So let's talk about, I mean, I brought it up in Sponsorship Corner. Let's talk about the Daily Bugle.
Yes, the one bright spot in this movie.
I have to say, J.K. Simmons, I am so glad that they brought him back when it came to, like, Spider-Man Far From Home, because... He is J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, it literally cannot be anybody else. I bet you at some point they were like, yeah, like, we need to bring this character back, and they probably mulled over, you know, a bunch of different possibilities, and they were just like, it can be no one else.
Well, you want to hear the alternate castings for J. Jonah Jameson?
I want to guess at least one. Let me think. Like, I feel like John Malkovich might have been up for J. Jonah Jameson.
No, John Malkovich. It's actually a weird list. Like, some of them you may, like, you might not even know who they are. I mean, I don't even know who a couple of them are.
Okay.
R. Lee Ermey, which is a name that I recognize. I can visualize him, but I can't think of anything else he's been in. But he always plays, like, some sort of tough general guy or something.
Hmm.
Oh, he might have been... No, never mind. I was going to say he might have been the guy from Oates Military Academy in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, but that's not who it is. No. Hugh Laurie, who is House.
I could see Harv that.
Harv Preynell, I don't know who he is. Dennis Farina, that's another one where I can picture him, but I don't know what else he's been in. Okay, Michael Keaton Fred Ward, Bill Paxton, and this is the most surprising one for me, but I kind of dig it. But Stan, the man Lee, actually really wanted to play J. Jonah Jameson in this movie. And they just said he wasn't right. But I can kind of dig the idea of Stan Lee playing J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, I could kind of see. It's hard to imagine, like, Stan Lee being mean.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he is kind of that guy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that J. Jonah Jameson is a little bit based on him.
Yeah.
Knowing the little bit, like, I've read an autobiography of his. And, I mean, despite his public facade, he definitely had his foibles.
Yeah, things like the Steve Ditko stuff wasn't handled very well back in the day.
Yeah, or Jack Kirby, or basically Kirby, any artist that he worked with.
Yeah, I've heard that about him. We've got a bit of a rose-colored image of Stan Lee, where he shouldn't be getting sold credit as much as he is for some things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, J.J. Jameson has to be, Parker! You know, like, that's what you need out of him, and that's what J.K. Simmons gives us.
Yeah.
I do have to wonder, though, like, there's the part where Peter Parker brings him pictures, and he's like, hey, I've got all these pictures of Spider-Man, and he's like, okay, I'll give you $200 for them.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, $200? That's not fair. Yeah, okay, $300, standard freelancer fee. And it's like, okay. So is that $300 for each picture? Because he just gave you a picture. You just went through them. Crap, 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 crap. Like, there's like 10 pictures in here. Does that mean he got $3,000? Or are you paying him $300 for the folder? Because at that point, Peter should have been like, okay, pick the one you want. I'll take the rest. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll go sell them to another paper.
Yeah. So, like, there's one. I mean, there's obviously been a lot of Spider-Man animated series. But there's one, I think it's like the 1980 or like the 1970 something one, where like Betty Brant is actually the ends up being the romantic lead for most of it.
Oh.
And I almost kind of feel like that might have been a better way to go about it in this movie, and have like not just go so hard in on MJ. Yeah. Have MJ and Harry actually like build a relationship. Not just some weird secret thing that where she clearly like doesn't like him and has never liked him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there is the one point that he goes in for a kiss and she like turns her cheek so that he can only kiss her on the cheek when they're up on the balcony.
Yeah, when she's in
before everybody gets blowed up.
When she's fully in her full cultural appropriation garb.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I wrote down that exact phrase, actually. I may not have used the word garb, but cultural appropriation was in there in my notes, yeah.
I had to laugh, because I remember people bringing that up, like, more recently, obviously, but I didn't realize that Harry has a whole line about it, like, oh, like, you should have worn black, like, my father, and this is, like, so sick, when he's like, my father likes black, and, you know, MJ, in this situation, maybe you should have. I don't know what you were thinking wearing a kimono.
Did you notice our friend Bill Nunn from Sister Act in the Daily Bugle office?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Because when we talked about him back in Sister Act, I said, oh, yeah, he plays Robbie Robertson. And you're like, who's that?
Oh, right. So it's, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was weird in that scene seeing Elizabeth Banks. It's like, as we've watched more of these movies and we get to see, like, you know, even Joe Manganiello, like, you're starting to see like people in their very first roles.
Yeah.
It's very strange to see them in these tiny little roles with like no gravitas, and then think of like what they've become now. Like, now Elizabeth Banks is a powerhouse.
Yeah, but
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, here she's the secretary that gets a couple lines.
I had to laugh in the in the parade scene. It just doesn't age very well that they have Macy Gray singing this song.
Yeah. Well, most of the sponsors I picked out were from around Times Square there.
Yeah.
And that's where I had to laugh. Is like, not only do you have Macy Gray singing, but you're also seeing like ads for the Palm Pilot and things like that. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, this scene hasn't necessarily aged. Right? I mean, I love me some Macy Gray. Don't get me wrong.
I've never been a fan. I've never understood the appeal, but I feel like clearly she made the most of her limited time in the spotlight.
Yeah. So there's the scene just before Bonesaw where, you know, Peter is like, "Oh no, I'm going to the downtown library," right? And Uncle Ben's like, "No, I'll drive you, Peter. I need the exercise." Great line. Love that line, by the way. But mm-hmm. I did Google the downtown library because Uncle Ben says to Peter, "I'll pick you up here at 10. And the downtown New York library is only open till 6 p.m. daily. So I don't understand why Uncle Ben was picking him up at 10. I mean, do some research, writer of the film.
Gosh, where's your 2002 internet?
That's right.
2000 internet, probably.
Yeah. They're on Ask Jeeves. So, okay, so let's get back to that World Unity Day, like we were just discussing a second ago. I'd like to know the science behind the pumpkin bombs that turn people to skeletons before vaporizing them.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. I'd completely forgot about that. Yeah, I don't know what the science is behind it or what the directors or writers were thinking. Like, why couldn't it have just been an explosion? Like, yeah. Why couldn't you have just blown them up? Or he has guns. Why couldn't you have just killed them all?
Like... Yeah, I mean, I said earlier that I was kind of impressed with the CGI in this movie, that most of the effects held up. The skeletons crumbling didn't necessarily do that, though.
No. I wonder if they had to go, because what is this movie rated? Did they have to not have blood, like blood or something, or like couldn't show people getting shot maybe or something like that?
Well,
like...
his face gets fucked up at the end, so yeah. I mean, yeah, so
maybe they were only allowed one person to be impaled, one person to be cut. Yeah. Only a maximum of 5 contusions. I don't know. One terrified old lady.
Yeah, I've got a PG rating on it. I just looked it up. Oh, wait, but then it started playing the trailer, and it said that it's the rating that's on that says PG-13, so I don't know.
Hmm.
Okay, so somewhere between PG and PG. Maybe it's PG-13 in the States, PG in Canada. That's entirely possible.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with that scene, I mean, he rescues MJ and then, like, swings, like, 3 blocks away to drop her off. and it's just like, that's not very convenient. Like, you're going to drop me off on this fucking rooftop 3 blocks away from where I was? Gee, thanks for the save, Spider-Man.
You know who I am. I'm your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man! Another excellent delivery by Tobey Maguire.
Yeah. Oh, at the very end, when they kiss in the graveyard, and she touches her lips, does she know at that point?
I assume so. I assume that that's what's happening. My only problem with it is they're pretty far removed from the kiss, so why all of a sudden did she just remember?
Yeah, it's not like they had just broken apart and she goes, immediately. Yeah, it took her all that time to process it.
I also kind of feel like he should have just unmasked when he was saving her, you know, at the end when they have the... Again, this is a Batman moment stolen from Batman Forever, when it's like, choose your girl or the people.
Yeah.
And he manages to save them both, but...
No, 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 no. You're not saying it poetic enough. you have to say it as, Spider-Man, this is why fools are heroes. Because you don't know when some lunatic will come along with some sadistic choice. Let die the woman you love. Or suffer the little children. That's how he says it. He doesn't He doesn't say pick the girl or the kids. No, it's or suffer the little children.
There you go. Much better.
But I have to say that this is kind of a low-stakes final battle that we get in this movie compared to so many other superhero movies. The end of Amazing Spider-Man, we've got the Lizard trying to set up a gas to, like, turn everybody into lizards in the city, and you know, you have all these big events. Bane is trying to blow up Gotham, all that sort of thing. But then here it's like, okay, you have to save these 15 kids, And then we're going to go off into an abandoned building somewhere and just fight each other. I mean, I don't need an end game, but I mean, like, the Mysterio battle at the end of No Way Home, or Far From Home, is, like, so much more, so much grander. Even Electro in the shitty Amazing Spider-Man 2 has, there's more stakes there.
Yeah.
There's more people at risk.
Yeah, I love the Electro scene in Amazing Spider-Man 2. So good. And they kind of, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man, which one is it where they kind of copy, like, in this one they have the guys on the barge come in to save the day, but in one of the Amazing Spider-Mans, there's that scene where all the cranes, like, turn inward so that he can swing.
That's the first one. He's on his way to get the lizard. I mean in this movie, I mean, that's the other thing that makes him such a low stakes villain, is that all these New Yorkers are just throwing shit at him from the top of the bridge, and it's like, oh hey, I can't stop that, I'm out of here, right? They added in that scene though because this was a post 9/11 thing. They added it in because it reflects the city's sense of unity and patriotism, that all these New Yorkers would band together and come to Spider-Man's aid. But it's just like, but what it makes it look like is that you've got this feeble bad guy that can't do anything against some guys throwing a couple wrenches.
I mean, even earlier, like, I don't know about you, but do you think, would Green Goblin react so strongly to Spider-Man shooting webs at his helmeted face?
Well, I guess the shock of being temporarily blinded.
Maybe.
You're right.
I mean, seemed pretty stringy to me. Like, it didn't even look like it was a full, like, it looked to me like if I was wearing that mask, I would still have, like, some vision. Yeah. Vision enough to see. I wouldn't have been completely out of sorts.
I don't know. Aunt May, is that an angel?
Is that an angel?
I just realized we're getting into, like, the territory of I hate sand. It's so coarse and rough. We're getting into that kind of territory with some of these lines. Aunt May, is that an angel? You've been in love with that with her since the first grade, and it's like everybody knows it. Oh shit! I better go call MJ. He knows who I am. How does Peter not realize that he should know who he is? Then
that was actually like my I was blown away. I did not remember. Like, I've always thought that Peter knew by that point that Norman was the Goblin.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was so shocked to rewatch it this time and be like, oh yeah, he legitimately doesn't know until the end of the movie.
Yeah, that... like, there's the scene in the first Tom Holland Spider-Man where you have it between Michael Keaton and Tom Holland where it's like, okay, I know you know. So let's not bullshit anymore. Whereas in this one, yeah, I always thought at Thanksgiving,
yeah,
Peter kind of put two and two together where it's like, wait a minute, I know, I agree. I think in my head I had kind of made that the point where Peter realizes.
Yeah, I was the same way. I did think another area of poor writing was. Like, when the Goblin bursts into Aunt May during her prayer time, I just felt like that was so, like, just, I don't know what they were going for there. It was just, finish it!
Yeah.
Like, it just, what the heck?
Oh, save me from whatever, like, yeah.
Deliver us from evil!
Those eyes, those yellow eyes. Yeah. Have you ever noticed, though, at Thanksgiving dinner that they're wearing the villain's colors?
No. I haven't noticed that.
Yeah, Peter is wearing a green shirt and, they're enemies' colors. Yeah, Peter's wearing a green shirt and Norman Osborn is wearing blue.
Oh. Huh. Yeah, I didn't notice. What a movie.
Those eyes, those horrible yellow eyes. I read that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine was supposed to make a cameo in this movie, and he was even like in New York ready to film, but they couldn't get the hands on his costume, so they didn't put him in. I don't know. I thought that was kind of fun. That would have been a fun tie-in, but I mean, with all the headaches of getting Spider-Man in the MCU that you've heard about, I can't imagine Fox and Sony striking up a deal to actually make that happen. So yeah, I don't know how much I believe that one.
The only other note I have is I found the montage after the Uncle Ben, when it's like the news clipping showing what Spider-Man's been up to, and then there's that one where it reminded me of like the 1966 Batman, where Peter just comes in, puts his mask, like stares at the screen, puts his mask on, and then walks off. I thought that was really funny.
Sam Raimi definitely has some interesting directing choices, and it makes me wonder what the new Doctor Strange movie is going to be like, you know?
Yeah. And then I also really liked the, I actually really liked this stuff early on of Peter in school. Like, even after he gets bit and he goes back to school, the whole fight with Flash in the hallway and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really fun moment.
What I don't like about that, though, is, like, everything he does is in self-defense, right?
Yeah.
He gets in one lucky shot, and Uncle Ben is pissed off at him for beating up some kid at school. It's like, I punched him in the gut. He took 30 swings at me. I got in one. I don't know. I just, I think it's a little over the top of how Uncle Ben is reacting to it.
Yeah.
So that closing fight... some of the sound effects, I have to say, in that final battle, there's some really weird sound choices as well. This is something else Sam Raimi likes to do. Like, when he breaks through the... like, when Green Goblin breaks through the web that Peter has put in the way, and it sounds like scraping metal and breaking glass. You know, it's... I don't know, like, it's... and, like, even the style of the fight, it's a very Sam Raimi-style fight. Like, very brutal, but he starts punching the Green Goblin in the helmet. Now, you were talking about the fact that he was shooting web at him and he had this big overreaction. Like, when he's punching him in the helmet, don't you think he's doing more damage to his own fists than he is to the guy under the mask?
Yeah, I found the power level between Green Goblin and Spider-Man very inconsistent. I think there's a point, like, that during the fair... it seems like Green Goblin can just, like, kick his ass. And then when they have the fight in the fire, in the burning building, things seem more even.
Yeah.
And then again at the end, but I guess Spider-Man would be tired from holding up a cable car and all that. So I guess that makes sense. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it was hard to gauge, like, where they're at strength-wise relative to one another.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, Peter just does the backflip, so he doesn't even get the finishing blow anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Peter, don't tell Harry.
Don't tell Harry.
Yeah, and then he drops off Norman's body, and we have the funeral of Norman Osborn, and the whole, I love you, Peter Parker, from MJ. And then he's all hit, like, yeah, but we're just friends, so fuck you.
I just kept thinking, well,
there's only one man.
Am I going to see Peter Parker again?
Bitch, we're just friends. Sorry. See ya. Peace. I'm out.
And yeah. So bad.
And that is Spider-Man. Oh, boy. Colin. On IMDb, it scored a 7.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 73. On Rotten Tomatoes, this one blows my mind. It has 90% on the tomato meter, so critics gave it 90%, but the audience has only given it 67%.
Wow, that's very surprising for a movie like this. This is one of those movies where you would expect, like, the audience to be raving about it and the critics to be shitting all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, webbing to the mask, hit us with some reviews.
Just doing a quick check of Google. See if there's any funny ones that stand out, but it doesn't look like it. So I will move on to Subhan A from Rotten Tomatoes gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "This was an amazing movie. The Green Goblin was perfect, Spider-Man was perfect, and the whole story was perfect. I love the cinematography, and the casting choice was really good. I like the suit and costumes. Also, this was a really good origin story. This story was always intriguing. What made me put it into 4 stars is that there was some weird acting, cringe lines, and bad CGI, even for the time."
See, I disagree about the CGI. I thought it mostly held up. I don't know. I mean, I gotta give it props. I mean, it's, you know, you could tell, but yeah. I lean more towards there were some cringe moments, not necessarily the CGI, though.
For sure. Jorge M. gives the movie 4.5 out of 5 stars and says, "Until this day's non-adaptation of a superhero of Marvel on the big screen have been being able to get over this trilogy. Well, except for the third one. It's an instant classic with an extraordinary vision. The way of direct this film was a breakthrough to create the category of superhero film together, the X-Men films. It gets a great balance between the excitement, touching and amusing with unforgettable performances, around script, and great action scenes. Considering all of this, it isn't perfect, but I will talk about perfection in the second film."
Now, is it just our internet connection? Or is it the review itself? Is he missing some words in there?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
I mean, his name is Jorge, so I think.
Oh, Google Translate might not have.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Aiden B. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "The first Spider-Man movie is an absolute classic, offering great action and an astoundingly good villain and an entirely fresh and memorable story. The beginning is a bit slow, and the CGI feels outdated to today's standards. However, it is quickly overshadowed by all the goods in this film. The ending sets up the rest of the trilogy well and keeps the audience eager to see the next Spider-Man film. With a cast that perfectly fits their roles, an unforgettably classic story, and some of the most emotional sequences in any superhero movie made, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man stands as one of the most memorable superhero films, despite its obvious flaws."
Okay. Yeah, there are a few obvious ones.
Charles F. gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, "Solidly decent. Willem Dafoe and James Franco are both unintentionally hilarious in their performances, and yet they play them well enough to be taken seriously. J.K. Simmons' J. Jonah Jameson is perhaps the best superhero casting of all time."
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
And then this is my favorite review that I found. Bus T gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "Fucking banger. Toby Dipfuck Maguire shines in this absolute masterpiece. Have we ever seen a better performance than Toby in this movie? I know J.K. Simmons is packing a huge dick with that line delivery. Aunt Bus, inspirational as always, making a MF cry and shit. Best movie of all time."
Wow, okay.
There you go. Those are my reviews for the week.
Right on. Yeah, so I have a feeling that our little usual summary here won't come as much as of a surprise to anyone that has listened to the previous part of this podcast. I was underwhelmed by this movie, to be perfectly honest. Here's what I will say about Spider-Man. I appreciate what it did.
Yeah.
It gave me my first live-action Spider-Man. It ramped up what superhero movies will do from here on out. It really does have a very important place in the superhero conversation. But I'm very glad that the superhero genre... People say they have fatigue from the superhero genre, but I am glad that it has improved in quality over the years from the time that this movie came out, because at the time, this was the shit. This was the greatest. I would agree with all those reviews that I saw, but now when I can put this up against even 50% of the movies in the MCU, they do not compare whatsoever. You know, Christopher Nolan Batman, even some of the Zack Snyder shit is better than this. Like, it's just, this is... It's good for what it was. It's good for what it gave us. But now looking back at it 20 years later, I'm glad we've got a new Spider-Man. I'll be excited to see Tobey Maguire in the new movie if he shows up. I will be absolutely jaw dropped on the floor, thrilled to see him and Andrew Garfield in that movie if they show up. But I'm kind of glad that he had his time as Spider-Man and that we've moved on, because it's brought us better things. But thank you to this movie for bringing me what it is, or what it did. But yeah, I'm down with the audience rating of Rotten Tomatoes. 60%, 65%. The acting quality isn't there. I'm not hating Kirsten Dunst as much as you seem to. I don't mind her too much as MJ. Tobey Maguire didn't do it for me. James Franco didn't do it for me. Willem Dafoe had some weird moments. It's thank God this movie gave us J.K. Simmons, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's my view on Spider-Man.
I think that's pretty well said. I agree. I think that I can appreciate this movie for paving the way to what we have, to the bounty that we have now.
Yeah.
But when you look back at it, I mean, I'm going to rewatch the trilogy probably now. It'll probably be the last time I watch it for some amount of time, because I just think, like, clearly, like, the MCU version is just, it's just a better, it's just done a better, it's just done Spider-Man the right way.
Yeah.
I think that it's hard looking back on it now, because I do remember going and watching it and thinking this movie was, like, the shit. And I remember listening to Hero by Chad Kroeger and Josie Scott, like, on repeat.
Over
24/7, anytime it was on Much Music.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely remember this movie as a high point of my, I guess it probably would have been, like, high school years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, the fact is, it's like, it doesn't hold up as well in my mind as, like, say, like, the Michael Keaton Batman.
Right.
Like, there's like, a classic quality to the Michael Keaton Batman that, even though it's not as good as, like, cinematically not as good Christopher Nolan, it's still great. It's still a great movie that I would love, that I constantly go back and watch. I can't say that for Spider-Man. I just think, like, this, yeah, go ahead.
The bad guy in Batman is so much higher stakes.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that really floored me this time, is there's really not much to Green Goblin. It's he goes crazy, he blows up a balcony, and then they have a fist fight when he saves some kids. You know, like,
yeah,
like, there's no city ending disaster that is about to befall everyone. Yeah.
And I think that is what makes, from what I remember, like, with Spider-Man 2 and Doc Octopus, that's what makes Spider-Man 2 a much better film than Spider-Man, is because there is, like, Doc Ock is going to take out New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's that. But yeah, I agree. Like, I just think the story of Spider-Man is very lacking in any sort of, like, real emotional stake, or I never really fear for Spider-Man at any point. Nobody seems to be connecting to one another in any palpable or interesting way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, now that I have watched a couple of the other movies, it pisses me off. Spider-Man 2 is not on Netflix, but Spider-Man 3 is. So I watched The Amazing Spider-Man, and then I watched Spider-Man 3. I have to go find, like, my Spider-Man 2 DVD. Anyway, you know, having watched those, it's this one is a very simple movie compared to the Amazing Spider-Man movies, because those ones, they threw in all this extra complication and intrigue because Peter's trying to figure out who his dad actually was and all that sort of thing. So it's like they overcomplicated the Amazing Spider-Man. They undercomplicated this one. The MCU Spider-Man is kind of the happy middle, because they took out the origin story, and now you can just focus on the life that Peter is living, and it's not overly complicated. You know?
Yeah, I also felt like he doesn't spend a lot of time being Spider-Man in this movie.
No.
Like, from what I remember in Amazing, like, liking a lot in Amazing Spider-Man, is that he spends a lot of time being Spider-Man and, like, swinging through New York and doing, like, little things and stopping, like, little bank robberies and all of that. You don't really... They kind of have the montage, but other than that, he's only Spider-Man during, like, the really big events.
Yeah.
It is more focused on him as Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't really strike a good balance with that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm very, like you said, I'm very kind of just, like, meh about this movie. But you can't deny its place in the history of comic book movies, for sure. So,
yeah.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. Best way to sum it up. And there we go. That is Spider-Man, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, Well, go give us 5 stars. Whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on, give us 5 stars or end a review. Those reviews, they just drive us up the charts. They help us get noticed. Or just tell somebody. It's amazing how far word of mouth goes to let people know about a show, to help us build an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become an executive producer of the show, become a financial supporter, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and get a shout out on the show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. And if you want, you can also send us an email, send us your... I guess Christmas is past, New Year's is also past, so don't send us any greetings, I guess. But you can still email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. And to anyone that is still listening at this point in the credits, I just want to say thank you for joining us all year. If you're listening to this on the date of release, last day of 2021, here's hoping you have a great 2022. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.